Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Steve Zwemke. 22 years ago, Orville Chenoweth had a few ideas to revive the weekly dirt racing program in Huron. Since taking over as promoter, the track has hosted some of the biggest shows in racing, including the World of Outlaws Sprint Cars and Late Models, and the Wasota 100. Chenoweth is stepping down in just a couple of weeks after the four-day run of the Wasota 100, which annually feeds well over $1 million into the local economy. Chenoweth's contributions to racing are many, but what happens to racing in Huron and the Wasota 100 remains to be seen. It's something that has racers, businesses, and fans wondering too. I've known Orville Chenoweth for about 20 years, and I visited with him by phone from Huron on Monday to look for some answers, but also to reminisce about some of the highlights along the way. Orville, you just had season championships at your track a couple of weeks ago, but you're not quite done. How are preparations going for the Wasota 100?
Well, I'll tell you what, we've had 9 of the events now, and so some of the stuff comes a little bit easier, but every once in a while I get thrown in a little punch with the weather, and we have to work around that. But so far, everything's going together real well.
For listeners that aren't versed in the local racing scene, what is the Wasota 100, and what's in store for Huron and area racing fans?
Well, I'll tell you, we normally get around 400 cars, and we will be going from, on the 12th, September 12th will be our practice, but 13th, 14th, 15th, 16th, and that'll be full bore racing. There'll be 6 classes of cars, and we have a 33-car start field at each one of our features, so that makes it really interesting. But it'll be a full show like it's always been, and I look forward to a good one this year.
Now, since you've taken over hosting the Wasota 100, didn't that used to be a 3-day event, and then it became a 4-day event at Dakota State Fair Speedway?
Well, see, basically, years and years ago, one track hosted it, and then there was some skimmish stuff going on with Wasota back then, and so then they went to a 2 deal. They had a deal in Black Hills and then Aberdeen, South Dakota for quite a while. Mm-hmm. And then they turned around and then they tried a 3-day event, which was in Gillette, Huron, and I think the other one was Brainerd, Minnesota. And everybody got hit with rain except for myself, and we had a very successful one. So then we went back to the table, made a decision that maybe we'll try one of them. And so we tried one Wasota 100 again, and it's been running great ever since. Luckily, it was at our racetrack here in Huron, and things have been going good.
Yeah. Let's take a few steps back. How did you first get interested and involved in racing?
Well, I drove by my boy used to run a modified. Well, first of all, he started in a street stock. Then he was running a modified, and this was back in 95, right around there. And there wasn't but about 40, 50 people in the grandstand, and there was only about 30-some race cars. And I was one of these guys that knew it all and drove by there and put my foot in my mouth, and I said, somebody needs to make this thing change. So I went to the fair board. Leland Kleinsaucer was the chairman at that time, and he said, if Orv says he can do it, let's give him a chance. And, man, alive, I've had it for 22 years now.
Were you even interested in racing, though, before Chad started racing? Had you been around it?
Oh, yes. Okay. I've been around it ever since. Well, matter of fact, my cousin used to run what they used to call like an old hobby stock, and mm-hmm. he was from Oneida, South Dakota, and he came down for the state fair one year, and he pulled in our yard, and I was about 11 years old, and he said, you want to go to the races with me? And I said, okay. And he said, well, you got to have a white shirt and white pants. And I said, well, I don't have any white pants. I got a white T-shirt. And he said, well, that'll work. And I thought I was going to church to start out with. And we get out here, and here's at the racetrack. And a gentleman named Fred Buckmiller was the promoter at that time during the fair. And he started barking out stuff, and I thought, holy Toledo, what did I just get into? And then from that point on, basically, I built probably 30-some cars for Granny's Performance. I did some late models 1 year. I used to weld up a lot of their kit cars and repair a lot of cars. And then I, once in a while, would hot lap a car or two. And then I was a pit guy for Denny Selding and Roger Sawtoff. And so, yeah, it all goes back for a while. Then I drove a mini sprint for a couple years and went to Sedalia, Missouri, and some of that stuff. But, oh, yeah. I've had fun ever since.
Yeah, I remember Denny was one of the Denny's one of the first guys I remember when I started watching racing. What are some of your favorite advances in local dirt track racing that you've seen over the last couple of decades?
Well, I'll tell you, I was very impressed with that last show they had at St. Louis here a little while ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
the one in the dome?
Yeah, the one in the dome, that was very impressive. And that, but I've been to the World. I've been to Eldora a few times. I went to the Million. I went to all that stuff. And, you know, some of that stuff, you know, going to those events gave me some different ideas at our racetrack here in Huron. And just all that stuff sort of brought it all together. You know, 22 years ago, I think it was, 23 years ago, Kenny Lindblad, I asked him if he'd like to be my announcer, and he said he would. And I said, well, let's go to Daytona. And so I took him to Daytona, and we were down there in the trade show, which is used to be underneath a hotel down there. And they had a big parking lot in the bottom, and they'd open it up, and they'd have drivers from all over and so forth would be down there at that trade show. And we walked by this one gentleman's booth, and there was two orange cars sitting there. One was a midget, one was a sprint car. And here's this little guy. He was probably just a hair bit bigger than the big rear tire on it. And he was sitting there, and nobody was around. I mean, nobody was. He was just sitting on that tire looking like he was going to fall asleep. And I told Kenny, I said, you better go get that guy's autograph. And he said, who is he? And here he was, you know, about an 11, 12-year-old kid. And I said, well, I don't know. But I said, doesn't he look like he's got something going for him? So he went over and got his autograph, and his name was Tony Stewart. So Kenny got a picture, everything, and signature from Tony Stewart when he was that young.
You know what? I'll say hi to Ken right now, too, because I've heard Ken tell that story, and it's a pretty cool story, too. What are some of the improvements that happened at Dakota State Fair Speedway under your direction?
Well, see, when I took it over, it was a big 5/8-mile track.
Yeah.
And so I wanted everybody out of the infield, so I put an outside pit area. And between myself, the state, the county, the city of Huron, we must have brought in, there was a, they were dredging the river at that time, so that one, it needed a big hole filled. And so we hauled for over a week and a half solid with dump trucks and side dumps and everything else to fill that big hole in there. But I moved all the fence myself. I turned around and we relocated some lights, and then eventually we put the great big lights in. And I widened the track out, and I made it from a flat track to a 6.5-foot bank. And I did all that. I did all the guardrails. I put in all the lighting. We did all the sewer work in the infield. I mean, me and Bill Janko argued quite a few times about the seating up there, and he finally went along with us, and we got rid of all the wooden benches and put in the new aluminum seating. And we did, there's just been a tremendous amount of stuff that we did. Redid the beer area, put a VIP lounge in, turned around and redid their concession area. Got a hold of a lot of sponsors. They helped put new concrete in the as you walk in the walkway. We put a last lap. We did a winners, you know, from back in 1914. We put a did the research. Butch Nowes helped us with all that. We put all that research on the wall. There was just a lot of things that we had done. And now it's a lot of it's all tore up. I was asked to take the lounge down. I was asked to move a lot of stuff out of there. And now they're sitting with an empty grandstand area, and they're redoing, you know, a lot of the cracks and so forth, and putting new concrete down and so forth. But
yeah. I got to see a lot of those improvements take place when I lived in that part of the state closer to the racetrack, and really enjoyed, you know, just coming up year after year and seeing what was going to be different every season. You had a lot of big events come through there, and you still do with the Wissota 100 in just a couple of weeks. You had the World of Outlaws there. You've had you started with the Have a Tampa late model series, which kind of morphed into different names, but still had some of the great late model drivers. In your mind, what's the biggest event you promoted at Dakota State Fair Speedway?
Well, I think the biggest one is the Wissota 100. It took me many years to get a hold, you know, to get it. But, you know, I had the Gum Out series. That used to be the series before the World of Outlaws Sprint Cars. I mean, it was their, like, an infinity race, you know. And I had them, and I never could get the Outlaws themselves until just recently, the last few years we've had them. But, yeah, I started out with Have a Tampa, the Cigar Deal, and went into the Extreme and did all those series as we went on. And I guess the only one I've never had is Lucas, because that just became more popular in the last 5 years.
Right. I was visiting with a vintage racer from Minnesota a couple of weeks ago, and he was showing me an old newspaper clipping. And it was racing results from Canby, Minnesota, back in the early 1970s. And the racing divisions were Class A, Class B, and Class C. Now we have late models, limited lates, sprint cars. We've got 410s, 360s, 305s, micro sprints, super stocks, pure stocks, hobby stocks, street stocks, modifieds, and B-mods, and the list goes on and on. Are there too many divisions, and does that make it harder to run a program when so many drivers across the board want to race?
Well, you know, you go back to 1914, they had what they called the big car. And you'll see the different ones on that board that we created out here. But, you know, we run five classes of cars, and normally during the Wissota 100, there's six classes. Mm-hmm. Now they've asked to sanction, like, the Pure Stock and sanction the Hornets. So actually in Wissota themselves, they've got eight classes of cars.
Yeah.
They used to have sprint cars as one of their classes, and it just got down to not enough numbers there, so they eliminated the sprint car division with Wissota. And I used to run those guys also, too. But, you know, all over the country, everybody, you know, it starts out that if your dad raced or whatever, he's got old car parts. And so then when you go to put your car together, you want to be able to use some of his parts. So then you have to look and see what division you can use them parts in. And a lot of them was like in a street stock or something. But, you know, it was here a few years back. I remember sitting in a meeting at Wissota, and we were all talking about the Midwest Mod. That Midwest Mod, we said we have to get back to basics. We have to be able to give them a motor that they can work on, that they don't have to take it to a motor builder, a car that they can work on, that they don't have to go and have a kit car or something like that affected, you know, and try to do some safety items on it that was needed, like a steel bar on the side and all this other stuff. So we all sat there for a couple years, and there's usually anywhere from 30 to 50-some tracks that go to the annual meeting and rules meeting, and we were sitting there and we all talked about it. Well, then we made up our mind that the most we were going to be able to pay these drivers was $200 to win. And everybody agreed that that's where it was going to be. And we're talking now 10 years ago or whatever it was. And it was supposed to not get any bigger than $200 so that they wouldn't spend all kinds of money to get these cars put together, this and that, whatever. Well, now the Midwest Mod is probably the biggest class that Wissota has, and then it's a series similar to that in IMCA and that also. But now these guys are sticking $30,000 in these Midwest Mods. It just gets out of proportion. Every class that you get, somebody has to go in there and ruin it and put something else new in there, and then the new thing has to be applied by another new thing, and da-da-da. And all of a sudden, you got one class that you made extinct. Now you got another class that you went to grow, and now that's out of control. And it's just one class after another gets out of control. And somewhere along the line, this racing deal is going to continue to do that until finally somebody puts their foot down and stops some of it. But they just won't do that. There's just too many drivers that want something different. I mean, like the Midwest Mod already, they want to put quick changes in that end because everybody's too lazy to change gears anymore. They want to just flip the cover out, stick a couple gears in, but they don't want to take the pumpkins out and so forth. So now we have a class that is a very good class at Midwest Mod, but you can stick $30,000 in it. Not the normal kid can do that anymore.
Yeah. You've seen racing at its peak, and you've seen it hit lows due to the economy and a variety of other factors. And I'm already just listening to what you're saying here about the Midwest Mods, and we've seen it too with late models and then the limited lates and then modifieds kind of died off and then they came back. What advice would you have to keep local dirt track racing flourishing in this part of the country?
Well, like I said, the drivers do it to themselves. They all want to blame it on the promoter or the organization or something. But, you know, we sit there, and it's not for one guy. It's for everybody. And you can't seem to get that across. When we go to our annual meeting, some of the drivers are now getting to be promoters or whatever, and when they come in there, it's my car. Or, you know, I work on this car, and it's got it. We need to change the rule for this. They're only thinking of that one car. That's all they're thinking about, and something to make it easier for them or something that they bought at a swap meet and they want to use it, and it just gets it out of control. And they need to have some board that will strictly stay bingo right on track and not let these guys have all the extra stuff. If they go to have extra stuff, it should be safety. It shouldn't be anything different unless somebody completely stops building a certain part and you can't get it any longer or it's not in older cars or whatever. But somewhere along the line, that's going to happen to our late models. Is going to be a touring series before too long,
yeah.
Just like you have with the sprint cars and so forth.
Yeah.
If they don't cure some of this problem, because you can take a late model car, and if you want to run a $60,000 motor like they do in some of these sprint cars, and you talk to the next guy says, oh, you'd have to be crazy to spend $60,000. Well, you go to Knoxville. You've been there just recently to the Knoxville Nationals. I'll bet you there wasn't a motor there under $30,000. If it was, it was something that a guy probably bought parts years and years ago for a few hundred here and here. But, I mean, to replace that style of a motor now, you're going to have 30-plus in it.
Our guest is Orville Chenoweth, promoter of Dakota State Fair Speedway in Huron for the last 22 years and retiring at the end of this season, the Wasota 100 coming up in a couple of weeks. Orville, I want to go back to the Wasota 100 one more time here. I was visiting with the Chamber of Commerce there just a few years back, and they were telling me that this event brings over $1 million, maybe $1.5 million, I believe, to the Huron economy annually. Do you have any idea as to the future of the 100 or even racing in Huron in general?
Well, the 100, I had bid for 218, and I would have had the 218 event, but I turned it over a week ago. I rescinded my offer there, and so Wasota is sending out to a couple other racetracks, mm-hmm. and this will be the last Wasota 100 in Huron, and it could be the last one for the state, because as far as I know, there's only two tracks that are bidding it now that is able to do it, and they're both in Minnesota, and then instead of having a one-year contract, they're going to go to a three-year contract. So that way, if a person's going to spend any money, he's got 3 years to recoup some of it.
Yeah.
So this here one will be the end of the Wasota 100 in here in South Dakota. So if anybody ever is going to attend it, they need to attend this one because this will be it. There is a few things you have to abide by when you go to bid that. And some of that, you know, I worked in the play of changing a few things around and so forth with that over the years. I was one of the promoters that, you know, when it was at Brown County and out in Rapid City and stuff, I was able to get a few rules into place that it gave a normal guy like myself a chance to get at it, you know. And so I had to play politics for about 5 years before I was able to get it. Now we've had it for 9 years. But you still have to run so many shows at this racetrack. You have to have a certain amount of seating. You have to have a certain amount of camping. There's a lot of things that go together with it. So this is probably one of the only tracks in the state that's able to handle this without a big major change. And like myself, I've built diggers, I've done all that stuff in order to, we can run like 10 races and go out with 3 diggers and dig it up and so forth. It'd be no different than what they do at the Boone Nationals, you know. And, but I, regretful, I gotta say that it's gonna go down the road.
As far as the future of racing in Huron, as a weekly program, then, where is that right now?
Well, there's nobody, you know, there's a few guys, there was a couple guys that wanted to get in. I'll tell you the truth. There's a couple guys that wanted to possibly bid it. You know, everybody's always going to say they can do a better job and so forth, and you really want them to do that, but now we have 3 local guys, and I don't know if they started the joke or if what their deal was, but they put a sign up out west of town here calling it Central State Speedway, and they claim they're going to build a oval track and also a drag strip. We got a couple other gentlemen from another racetrack that's sort of interested. There's some of that, but right now I would say I'm not sure where they're going to pull somebody out of.
Again, Orville Chenoweth steps down after 22 years of promoting Dakota State Fair Speedway in Huron at the conclusion of this year's WSOTA 100. Hundreds of racing teams from across the Upper Midwest and Canada and thousands of fans will flock to the 4-day event, which begins September 13th. You can visit dakotapromotions.com or wsota.org for more information. Thanks to Chris Loffery, China Lockett, and Lori Walsh at SDPB Radio, I'm Steve Zwemke, and this has been In the Moment. Kent Osborne and the Computer Guys have Tech Radio next.